Gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report on this Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. I am Joe Hagman, your co-host, coming to you live from our radio and television studios in Northwest Pennsylvania. We got a great show lined up for you tonight. Just a few items of housekeeping. We're going to have Peter Barry Chalka on in hour two, and we're going to have a guest, Charles Van Wyk, on in hour three, and that's going to be a fantastic interview. He's a pastor who stopped a few terrorists that attacked a church in South Africa where they killed, I believe, eight or 11 and wounded up to 53. And he stopped them with his 38 and shooting one terrorist. And he's got a great story to tell. And we're going to do that in the third hour. Before we get started here, got a quick word from Doug for our sponsor tonight, Casper Mattress.
Portion of tonight's broadcast brought to you by Casper Mattress, the award-winning sleep brand. Oh, what a great mattress. I miss it already. Casper.com/CFP Radio. That's Casper.com/CFP Radio. A special offer to our listeners, $50 toward your purchase of a mattress by using promo code CFP Radio. Just go to Casper.com/CFP Radio and use promo code CFP Radio. More on that later.
All right, we're going to jump right into tonight. We got a lot of places we're going to go. We have the first few minutes open, and then we're going to be joined by just recently released Navy sailor Christian Saucier. He's going to tell his story about the photos he took on a nuclear submarine and was sentenced to almost a year in prison. And we're going to talk about his case in relation to other similar cases and his penalty versus... when this happened and how this happened. It's going to be a very good interview. I'm really looking forward to it. And this kid just got out of jail, and we're going to hear his story in just a few moments. A couple pieces of news I want to hit. We have the count continues to rise. Many dead in a nursing home in Florida, Hollywood, Florida. Earlier today, the headline said 5 dead at nursing home. Now it's up to 8 as they continue to drag bodies out. And also I'm hearing that several bodies in the Florida Keys area, the southern Florida Keys area, are still being recovered too. So I'm sure we're going to have an updated body count on the storm total as the week progresses. Also, something we've been talking about with the economy on this show, the latest numbers have come in for how much the federal government collected in taxes through the last quarter, or I'm sorry, for the first 11 months of the fiscal year through October 1st, that ends October 1st, 2017, the federal government set another record, and it increased from $8.5 billion, the tax revenue that it collected, up over $3 trillion in total tax revenues, and yet the federal government is still running a $673 billion deficit. So as they continue to collect record amounts of taxes quarter after quarter, year after year, they continue to run higher deficits. As we showcased the piece on Hagman Report yesterday from Michael Snyder and his website that he wrote, debt nightmare, does anyone actually care that our exploding national debt is ruining our future? And we talked about that a little bit on the show yesterday. My father's on the way to Branson, Missouri, to go to the True Legends conference with Steve Quayle. So we have John filling in tonight for my dad. And John and I do a show each and every day, 2 to 3 p.m., called the Hagman Daily Show. And that's been a lot of fun doing that. And now we get a chance to work together here on Hagman Report on air. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We got, what, 3 shows?
3, perhaps 4, depending on how well Doug and Renee do getting back. Folks, greetings. Let's plan for 4. Greetings and God's blessing. It is a privilege and an honor to be here tonight. I'm receiving gesticulation from Tech Eric.
Yeah, I didn't get that. What's that?
I'm not sure. I think I scored a field goal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so here's what we're doing. We're making me look bigger, and I'm into that.
Well, you could be like my dad, and you know.
I'll tell you what. You want to talk about being made to feel bigger, folks? It's a long journey to. I think back to 2012, to standing on a set in the middle of the night at Warner Brothers and listening to Doug and Joe, and they had just got the show started, and I never really imagined I'd be working with them, and I certainly never imagined I'd work with them from this chair. And let me tell you, folks, this is a wonderful family, but it takes a lot of hard work to work from this chair, doesn't it, Joe?
It takes a lot of hard work, no matter what chair you're in. As you've seen the pace of our day, it's nonstop from morning until we get done with the show at 10 at night, and then, you know, we can rest after that, which makes for some long days sometimes, especially when you're starting your days at 7, 8 in the morning. And don't let my dad fool you. Oh, I was up at 4 a.m., yeah, he forgets to mention how his schedule works. But anyway, we can get into some news here before we have Christian on. And how do you pronounce his last name? Is it Saucier?
I believe Saucier? It's the French pronunciation, Saucier.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a fantastic interview. John got that scheduled today, and he's only been out of prison 6 days. And many of you are familiar with his case from the presidential election. Trump even commented on this during the campaign, and we'll talk about that when he joins us. A couple of places I just want to hit real quick before we get into that. There's a few things, interesting things going on in the world of news today, and we talked about this a little bit on our show. Hillary is in the news. She's got her new book out. I'm not going to go through all the news I went through today. Folks, if you want, read some of the excerpts. The Daily Caller has a great piece up that talks about Hillary and women. Hillary says women who voted against her caved to pressure from their fathers and husbands. In the book, she goes on to explain how after the election, all these women came up to her and asked her for her forgiveness for not voting for her, and she said she could not bring herself to absolve them of their sins.
Isn't that somewhat sexist, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely it is. But, you know, she can't do no wrong being the queen of evil that she is. And also, if you don't want to read the Hillary Clinton snippets from the book, there is plenty of other news out there. There's a article on Drudge that we posted earlier on Hagman Report about a city council allowing illegal immigrants the right to vote in local elections. And this is a slippery slope. You know, voting is a right secured for citizens by letting people who are not legal residents or actually are here illegally, you're doing a huge disservice to all the legal citizens who do vote.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, it's breaking the law. It's craziness what they're allowing to get through. But this is in Maryland, College Park, Maryland. It's just a local thing for local elections. But I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of this here in the near future.
Well, it serves both sides, Joe. As you and I discussed the other day on the Hagman Daily Show, the left, in perpetuity, wants the block of votes. And so bringing in immigrants, allowing them to vote as quickly as possible, streamline the citizenship procedure, if there even is that protocol any longer. And then, of course, for all the Fox News flag-waving Republicans, the problem we need to face and deal with, and our guest Daniel Horowitz last evening really nailed this one, is the structure of corporate America wants the cheapest labor that they can stuff into a little vest and a name tag.
Absolutely. And I mentioned this special on the History Channel. It was something, I don't remember the title specifically, but about the history of cars in America. And one of the things that's fascinating about that was how Henry Ford improved implemented the assembly lines. I don't want to say improved. He improved his own design later. But when they go through the history of the workers and the unions and wages and whatnot, they actually, back in the day when making $2.50 a day was a lot of money, Henry Ford implemented the $5 day, which was basically double what a middle class family was making back then, which propelled many people into the middle and upper middle class. You don't have companies like that doing this today here in America, and especially the tech companies, which are more the types that are hiring right now. You see them getting the out of the country talent brought in, and that's one of the big issues with the H-1 visas. Was it H-1B, H-1 visas? That allows all these people to come in from foreign countries to work in the tech industry, and that's mostly where they go, is to the for less money than what Americans make. So it's not just Americans not being able to find jobs, as you said, it's companies not willing to pay the proper wages that correspond with today's the cost of living. And it's unfortunate, but that's where we are today.
Well, you know, Joe, if you think about it, one would have to ask oneself, and we would need to get some human resources experts. And by the way, I don't particularly like that nomenclature, human resources. The two of those words together feel a mm-hmm. little Orwellian to me. But if we got some top-notch HR people on here, we could ask them this. How much does it cost, say, Google or IBM, to bring over a qualified applicant from Pakistan versus the same cost to nurture that individual through higher education, perhaps even having recruited them out of their junior or senior year in high school? It'd be interesting to see a cost analysis of that.
Yeah, it would. And I don't know what it will take to get wages to increase or get better paying jobs just in general. But we see the stock market, whether it's real or not, is stronger than it has ever been. And that's subject to change on a day's basis. But there are a lot of things. You know, we read yesterday, I think the story's still up here, median income highest in ever. And I don't know where that article went. I will look for it. But that didn't sound right to me, just in the way that we see things going economically in this country. And no matter how much growth we seem to get, we never see the bottom line, our bottom line, increase. Moving on here real quick to ESPN. I've been wanting to talk about ESPN all week because football started last week and I got a chance to watch a few games. I actually watched maybe 5 minutes of Monday Night Football, but I caught the Monday Night Football reporter who was either nervous or I don't know. Did you see that, Eric? I can't remember his name, but I read the story yesterday. And I thought at the time when I heard him talking, I'm like, what is he talking about? I thought I was the only one, but we'll talk about that more later. The reason I bring it up is Jameel Hill is a 6 a.m. Sports Center co-anchor, and he went on a Twitter, I don't know, he or she went on a Twitter rampage calling over 12 tweets calling Trump a white supremacist, basically. And our friend Kurt Schilling, who has his own show over at Breitbart, whatever it takes, I think it is called, he's been on the show several times, issued some very interesting comments, and ESPN actually fired Kurt Schilling over conservative comments. But they're letting, you know, all these other left-wing and liberal people dish out their hate and their side of the political opinion, and there is no consequences. I mean, you have a SportsCenter reporter, you know, just right out on over Twitter, Donald Trump's a white supremacist, he helps white supremacists, he defends white supremacists, all these series of tweets, every one obviously mentioning white supremacy. And, you know, here you have Kurt Schilling made some off-color remarks, and he gets fired. And we've seen
Robert Lee?
The guy could not, Robert Lee, the announcer, because his name was so similar to Robert E. Lee, was pulled from a college football game in Virginia from announcing it. And it's just crazy. The liberals are allowed to say whatever they want. Anything a conservative says is hate speech, and you'll get fired. And this is a society that we live in today.
You know, Joe, when we were doing the Hagmann Daily Show last week, and we first pulled that story on the rescheduling of Robert Lee from ESPN, I really felt like we had just arrived at Clown Town. I mean, this poor guy, folks, he's Asian American. First of all, he was born a comfortable 170 years after the Civil War.
No, it's crazy the types of politics and whatnot that is going on over at ESPN. We see a huge decline in the ratings of the NFL, as well as the huge drop-off of subscriptions to ESPN, and they've had to lay off a number of people. And Disney is re-examining, because Disney owns ESPN, they are re-examining that company and trying to figure out how to make it profitable again. And I say, as long as you interject politics into the world of sports, it will never happen. Well, John, we have our guest with us, Christian Saucier. He has just been released from jail. He was the U.S. Naval Machinist mate who was serving on a nuclear-powered submarine, the USS Alexandria, in 2009.
You know, folks, I want to really encourage all of you to sit back, really open your minds for this segment. We are very blessed and very honored that Christian Saucier agreed to join us. He's been out of prison, for 6 days. Now, I just want to give you a quick rundown on who he was. I had the opportunity to speak with this gentleman this afternoon, and I was honored to do so. A little bit about Christian Saucier. He served as a first-class petty officer, as a machinist mate. That was his MOS. He re-enlisted twice, and each time you do so, you are technically discharged from the Navy. So he has two honorable discharges for each time that he re-enlisted. And he had quite a service record, 11 years of service total, 5 of those years in fast attack subs. He was deployed to the Middle East on 2 occasions. He has been under CENTCOM on a number of occasions. That's the central command that really runs the hotspot areas of the world. And when I asked him about his decorations, he became humbled. His voice got a little lower, and he said, well, and actually I had to ask him to repeat the names of them. But he carries the Global War on Terrorism Expeditionary Force decoration and 2 Navy Achievement Medals. This young man spent a lot of time in a fast attack sub protecting all of us. And Christian, it is so great to have you join us here this evening. How are you, sir?
All right, I'm good. I'm glad to be out of prison, and thanks for having me on. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to me.
Well, it is certainly, and I'll speak for Joe and for our production manager, Eric, and our director of social medias here in the studio as well. We are all honored that you chose to join us this evening. Welcome home. I know that you are a relatively new father, so now you'll have a chance to get to know your little 2-year-old. And we've got some pictures included in tonight's show notes of you holding your little baby in uniform when you were still serving. And before we get started, Christian, I just want folks to really understand that you loved the Navy and you were committed to pulling a full 20. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I was re-enlisted out to my 12-year mark, and I fully intended on staying and past that.
And with, just with the few decorations that we mentioned by way of introduction to you, I got the sense when we spoke earlier today that you took your job fairly seriously. In fact, I get the sense overall that there's not a lot of room for horseplay on a fast attack sub.
No, yeah, I mean, pretty much everything you do, you know, if you mess up, you know, people die or, you know, really bad things happen. So it's a pretty demanding job. I mean, don't get me wrong, I really enjoyed it and I'm very proud of it. You know, not everybody gets the chance to do what I did, so it's definitely something to be proud of.
It is, and indeed you should be, and we're all proud of you, sir. You know, I made the comment to the team here before we went on air. I'm thrilled just to be conducting an interview with a submariner. I mean, I think I made this comment to you when we spoke off air earlier, Christian, but what man between the age of about 8 years old and dead doesn't find submarines interesting?
Oh, yeah, they're real interesting. I mean, it's definitely something. I mean, when I was a kid, my uncle worked at Electric Boat building submarines in Groton, so I got to tour one when I was a little kid, and from then on out, that's what I wanted to do.
Christian, I got a question for you, kind of way out of left field, has nothing to do with anything. So when you're in a submarine and you guys submerge, they are obviously adjust the pressure in there. Do you get your ears popping and things like that?
It's like being on an airplane, and you get the pressure changes and your ears pop and everything. Yep.
And one more question on that. When you come back up, you have to come back up at a certain pace or depressurize properly or else bad things can happen. Is that accurate?
Well, no. I mean, you come up pretty fast, you know. In any case where bad things happen, they can come up fast if they have to. But, yeah, I mean, the pressures have to equalize and everything like that, yeah.
Well, Chris,
sorry for the weird questions. But.
No,
oh, that's
actually,
okay.
When it comes to weird questions, I've got to jump in a little bit as well.
Well, I'll tell you just a funny story. My mom asked me when I first started serving on the submarine. She said, so, do they have windows on there? I said, no, it's not like, you know, when you watch 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and there's squid attacking and everything like that. Nothing like that.
It's not like that great old ride at Disneyland.
No.
But seriously, Christian, I'll throw you this curveball and then we'll get down to business. In all of the great submarine stories and certainly all of the great submarine movies, whenever they go into defense mode, usually the story's the same. They torpedo a freighter or another man of war, and then they've got to go deep, and they've got to be very quiet. That always made sense to me. What I never understood is, what's the deal with the red light? How come if they're so deep underwater, they need to go red lights?
Well, I mean, that's usually for when they come up to periscope depth, so that on the old submarines, the periscopes, you know, were a series of mirrors and magnifying glasses. So in control room, if they had regular lights on, it would travel at the scope, and then the enemy would be able to detect them from the reflection of it. So that's why they go red.
All right, Christian. We got about 5 minutes before the break, and okay. I want you to I want you to tell this story, and I want you to start wherever you want to. But if you want to give us in the next 5 minutes, give us a rundown of everything from why you joined the Navy to what happened on that day where you took the pictures, and anything and everything in between.
All right. Well, let me just start off by saying, you know, I've always been really patriotic, and I was actually in high school. I remember the day when I when September 11th happened, and I was in high school and I watched the towers fall. And after that, I knew I wanted to join the military and I wanted to serve my country and make a difference. And I actually did 4 years in JROTC in high school, and I was the battalion commander of my JROTC. So I always had intentions of joining the military. And it just so happened that, you know, a Navy recruiter came up to me and said, "Hey, you can do this job where you can operate nuclear power plants." And I said, "Wow, that sounds awesome." And he said, "Yeah, you can do it on a submarine." I said, "Oh, sign me up," you know. So that's kind of where it started. And, you know, I went to school and I graduated from nuclear power school, and I went to get stationed on a submarine in Groton in 2007. And I, needless to say, you know, I was pretty proud of what I did and of where I, you know, I'd worked really hard to get to. And I was pretty junior on the submarine when I took the pictures. It was in 2009. And, you know, I took them with, I think, the right intentions. Don't get me wrong. What I did, you know, in retrospect, is I shouldn't have done it, and it was stupid. But it was done with, you know, it was kind of a command environment at the place at that time. You know, I wasn't the only one doing it. Other people were taking pictures, and not for any bad or nefarious purposes. They were taking them because they were proud of what we did, you know, and it was something to be able to look back on later and say, "Wow, I did this. I was here." And, you know, and it ended up in 2011, shortly before my case started in 2012, two other guys on my same ship that were on there with me took pictures in the same area and got in trouble. They both, you know, got captain's masted, which is non-judicial punishment. So basically our commanding officer punished them, and he gave them a $200 fine for taking pictures in the same area. And they both have gone on and had great careers. They're still in the Navy, and one of them even became an officer. So, you know, when I got approached by FBI and NCIS in 2012, I said, "Oh man, well, you know," thinking in my head, "this is the worst that's going to happen, you know, is what happens to these guys, you know, because they got to look at it and say, look, these weren't taken with any malintent." Unfortunately, you know, as history proves it, it didn't go that way for me. And, so we find ourselves, you know, here where, it ended up being a big court thing, and, you know, I pled guilty because, you know, what I admitted to what I did. I said, you know, I shouldn't have done it. It was wrong. And they threw the book at me, you know, and I got a year in prison, and I still have 7 more months of house arrest, and then I have 3 years of probation. And then I also got an other than honorable discharge from the Navy. So I actually was, before I got discharged, the VA gave me a disability rating of over 70%. And unfortunately, I'm not able to get any disability or any medical treatment or anything like that because of the discharge that they gave me. So even though I have the 2 honorable discharges, you know, it kind of makes it null and void with what I got on the way out. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
You know, folks, I just want to reiterate what our guest, Christian Saucier, just shared with us. Now, 11 years serving our country in the United States Navy, nuclear submarines, no less. he receives an other than honorable discharge. Now, that disables him, with no pun intended, from receiving his disability benefits or any other VA benefits. Now, this man has a family, and they seem like a decent family living up in the Northeast. If you feel so inclined, visit HagmanReport.com. We do a great write-up every evening. The title of tonight's show, Snapshots or Espionage. So just go to that write-up. Click on Christian's name, and there is the ability to help his family out a little bit if you feel so inclined. And I'm especially calling out to the veterans out there. I'll bet even $5 here and there would make a difference when you've got a two-year-old and you're six days out of imprisonment that should have never happened to begin with.
Yeah, and Christian, we got about a minute till break, but I read that your cars have been repossessed and your house was in foreclosure. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of debt as a result of all this, you know, so it's going to take me a long time to dig myself out of it, but I'm pretty positive that once I can, you know, get off house arrest and actually start working and making a living, hopefully we can get back on the right track, you know. It's going to be an uphill battle, you know. I don't want to sugarcoat it, but now that I'm out of prison, obviously I can do something. I couldn't do anything in there to better ourselves or, you know, be a contributing member of society again, but hopefully,
well, Christian,
we're
right up against the break. When we come back, we're going to break down your story a little bit and ask you some questions about what you went through, what it was like, and kind of break it down a little bit more. And we'll continue, folks, to give out that website. If you go again to HagmanReport.com and click on the link, the hyperlink on Christian Saucier's name, it will take you to a page, youcaring.com. There you can help him and his family out. And we'll talk more about this on the other side. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report. We will be right back.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced, Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Perrotta's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this segment number two on this edition of the Hagman Report. We have Christian Saucier, and we're going to get back to him and his story. He was a sailor who was put in jail for almost a year for taking pictures on a submarine when his co-workers were doing the same thing and are still in the Navy. We're going to break that down a little bit, but first we have a quick word from one of our sponsors, Casper Mattresses.
Doug Hagman checking in from Branson, Missouri, where I'm with Steve Quayle, Pastor David Langford, and others. Oh, I miss being on the air with you live. However, I miss my Casper mattress. Perhaps most of all, I miss the beautiful sleep that the Casper mattress provides. I was telling my wife that nothing, and she agrees, nothing compares to the Casper mattress that we've got. Folks, Casper is a sleep brand that created an outrageously comfortable mattress that's sold directly to the consumers. That's you and I. No middleman, no showroom, no inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep surface was developed in-house. It's got a great sleek design, and it comes to you. It's delivered in this really small, how did they do that? How did they get that mattress in their sized box? Now, in addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. You'll love those, too. I know my wife and I do as well. And they also have pet beds. Ask Lady how she likes hers. You know, the Casper, it's an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It's affordable because they sell directly to consumers. And did you know they've got free shipping and returns to U.S. and Canada? Get a 100-night trial with free no-hassle returns if you're not happy. You know, they've got over 20,000 reviews with an average 4.8 stars. It's quickly becoming the Internet's most favorite mattress. That's based on Casper, Amazon, and Google reviews. It's designed, developed, and assembled right here in the United States. Folks, visit casper.com/CFP Radio. That's casper.com/CFP Radio. Stands for Canada Free Press Radio. That's casper.com, CFP Radio. And use the promo code CFP Radio. That's right, promo code CFP Radio toward, well, you'll get $50 toward your purchase, toward a mattress. You cannot beat that. Even at that shockingly fair price, they're offering this to our listeners. That's casper.com/CFP Radio with the promo code CFP Radio. Again, I miss the studio. I miss Eric. I miss the studio dog. And I miss you folks, but I do miss my Casper.
Our guest is Christian Saucier. And he is the young Navy sailor who was imprisoned for taking a photo on the submarine that he worked on. And Christian, before the break, you kind of told a quick version of your story. I want to ask you this. So you said that other people on the submarine, co-workers and whatnot, were taking pictures as well. What happened that the FBI was brought in? Was that the first line of questioning that you were up against?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they went right towards that. You know, I was questioned by NCIS and the FBI together at the same time. That was the first interaction that I heard that, you know, my phone had been found with the photos on it, and they were, you know, investigating me for, you know, a whole slew of things, you know, and just I kind of was taken aback by it, you know, when they sat me down and said, "We're investigating for this." I said, "You got to be kidding me, you know." It you know, you got to look at this, you know. I know your listeners can't see me, but I have USN tattooed on my arm. I have, you know, my warfare pin tattooed on my arm. I'm extremely proud. You know, I have an American flag on my arm as well. I said, "You got to be kidding me, you know. You got the wrong guy." And they clearly didn't believe that. You know, they didn't for a second stop and think, well, wait a second, you know?
Yeah, and if we can, just let's back up a little bit. You said that you acknowledged that you made a mistake, and you tried to, you threw the phone away, and that's where they found it. So what led up to that? You took the pictures. Then what happened after you took the pictures that led to law enforcement involvement and you throwing the phone away?
Well, the phone, they're the ones who found the phone, and I don't know exactly how that happened. They found it at the dump. So, you know, in 2009, I took the photos, and then, you know, on my cell phone. And then I had the cell phone, but, you know, I had gotten a new cell phone since. So it was it wasn't like it was still the phone I was using. And then it got found at the dump, and then all of a sudden I'm getting interviewed by the FBI and NCIS. That's kind of how it happened for me. And then, you know, they sat me down and they interrogated me and basically said that they were investigating me for espionage and for being, you know, for terrorism and all this other stuff. And that's kind of the point where I said, okay, well, you know, these guys aren't going to be reasonable with me. And so I talked to a lawyer and you know, it kind of went from there. After that, they said, labeled me as uncooperative and whatnot. But that was still in 2012. I didn't actually, they investigated me. They raided my house a couple times, and everything. And the investigation went on for almost 4 years before I actually got indicted. So it was, you know, my wife and I, got kicked out of our house after they raided it. So we ended up living in a campground for almost a year, before I got arrested. So, you know, it's,
so you didn't share the photographs, post them anywhere?
No.
You just discarded the phone, and that's how somebody came across it.
Yeah.
Found the pictures and then knew enough to say, hey, what is this? That seemed a little odd.
Yeah, it seemed a little fishy to me, too. I mean, but like I said, I don't want to guess as to how it managed to, you know, this person at the dump managed to find this phone in the middle of a 40 cubic yard dumpster, apparently, and knew enough, looking at the photos, to contact a retired Navy chief and ask him what they were, and then that's how, you know, NCIS says they got involved. And then because it was found outside of the Navy, FBI got involved, and they started, you know, making it into being this big espionage, you know, so it was the FBI Counterintelligence Task Force, and everybody got involved. So, you know, they came at me guns blazing. You know, it wasn't just like I sit down with my command and said, hey, what's going on here? They kind of said, okay, this is where it's going. And it went from 0 to 100 like that, you know.
You know, Christian, as I listened to your story and when we did our pre-brief earlier today, it sounds like there are intersections in your story where things, to make an understatement, proper protocol was discarded. Now, you explained to me, and you mentioned earlier in your remarks, that for the infraction that you freely admit that you did as a young sailor, you explained it to me. You said, you know, the military guys want to have a few pictures for memories, and I think you even used the example of maybe somebody standing next to the tank they served on or whatever. And of course, we've all seen those in our relative scrapbooks and photo albums and whatnot. But you admit that you made an infraction, and typically that should be sent to your commanding officer, correct? This is where the story starts. This is where the story starts to stink and get ugly. Folks, it was called, I believe you said, the captain's mast, to use kind of some old nomenclature. And you should have been, referred to your commanding officer, who would then determine the infraction and mete out appropriate punishment. Now, explain to our listeners what happened to you instead of that.
Instead of that, my command just basically said, okay, this is it. You're going to talk to these guys. And it was actually where they interrogated me was at my command. And I didn't have a command representative there or anything. They kind of said, okay, this is it. And the FBI and NCIS said, yep, we're investigating you for taking these photos with malicious intent, and you know, it went completely gung-ho. You know, usually within the military, not just the Navy, there's a procedure called handling things at the lowest level possible. So whenever possible, you know, like you said, it would be handled by the commanding officer, and, you know, worst-case scenario, be recommended to the judge advocate general for a court-martial, because being active duty, it should have never went to the civilian courts, and then never in my wildest dreams did I think that it would ever go to that. You know, even if they really wanted to nail me to the cross, they could have done it through the judicial system within the military. You know, they could have court-martialed me.
Now, Christian, I'm sorry. Let me pause you there, because this is important that folks understand this. You were in a very strange conundrum. And this is where I began to grow very concerned for you, for your plight. This is where it seems like justice started to become kind of a political witch hunt. And we'll get into the whole Hillary Clinton thing here in a moment. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you were an active member active service personnel in the United States Navy. However, you're being investigated by the FBI outside of the Judge Advocate General, JAG, and you're actually now going to be tried, or you're going to be presented, you know, evidentiary findings, etc., in a civilian court. That doesn't add up, Christian. Can you help me out with that? Oh,
well,
and I
honestly
want to mention one other thing. Yeah. And this is important, folks. Christian couldn't speak on his own behalf. That's why when you see pieces on big platforms like Sean Hannity, for example, it's often Christian's wife or mother conducting the interviews, because Christian was being, but pardon the pun, he was being a good soldier, he was being a good sailor, and he was maintaining his oath not to speak against the commander-in-chief, for example, when this thing got political and ugly, not to speak against the United States Navy, not to speak in any way, shape, or form about the missions that he had participated in. I just wanted to make that point very clear for our listeners and viewers, but Christian, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, and to your point, you know, I think if you ask my opinion on it, that looking back on it now, you know, at the time I was just overwhelmed, and it was just very overwhelming, the whole situation. I just couldn't believe that I was in it, you know. But looking back on it now, I think that the reason they went about it the way they did was, it's clear to me, is that they never intended me to be able to put up a defense. For instance, let's say they did court-martial me. I would have been appointed a Judge Advocate General lawyer, a JAG, and that would have been free of charge because it would have been handled through the military. So I would have been able to present a legal defense without bankrupting myself, and they didn't want that. They wanted it to go to a civilian court. One, because civilian courts are able to be publicized, whereas JAG or court martials are closed usually to the public, and that wouldn't have fit the narrative that the Obama administration wanted. They wanted to make an example of me, and they wanted to look like they were cracking down on people that mishandled classified information, you know, unless they were Hillary Clinton or one of their cronies. But they went after me in the way that they did because they knew that if they took me to a civilian court, one, I couldn't advocate for myself in the public media, because as long as they kept me in the Navy, which they did for, you know, 4 or 5 years while they were investigating me, I couldn't go on national media and speak out and say, hey, what they're doing to me is wrong, and draw national attention to it. I couldn't provide a legal defense. You know, we spent every bit of money. I liquidated all of our retirement. All of our savings, everything. And then I maxed out credit cards trying to pay for my legal defense. You know, we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on a legal defense, and I didn't even go to trial. And they knew that it was going to cost that. That's why they took me to civilian court, because in civilian court, even though you're military, a JAG won't represent you. So the military doesn't have to appoint you a lawyer. And unfortunately for me, being an E6, I made just above the threshold. I think it's $40,000 that you don't, or annual income, that you can't get appointed a public defender, which I tried to, and they wouldn't allow me to have one. So I had to pay out of pocket for a private attorney. And so that's kind of the reason why they did that, you know. And from the time that I was arrested to the time that I got sentenced, it was almost 18 months of court battle, and it wasn't even a trial. There was never even a trial. It was just, that was how they drew it out. So they, you know, every time I went to court, it cost me a lot of money, and they knew that. So not only was it designed to penalize me in the sense that, yeah, I went to prison, and yeah, I'm a felon now, and, you know, I got kicked out of the Navy, but it was designed to bankrupt my family. Because we, you know, my family sold off property. We did it just about everything we could until we had no more money left. And as a matter of fact, I got a bill from my attorney that I had at the time right before going to prison for another $8,000, which, you know, I don't know if I'll ever be able to pay. But, you know, it's just, I think that was their goal, was to make sure that I was, one, you know, quiet about it and that I didn't speak out, and two, to make sure that I couldn't provide a legal defense. Because, you know, on the military side of it, when I got my other than honorable discharge from an administrative board, I did have a JAG for that, and my JAG was excellent, you know, and he represented me the best he could. And, you know, I wish I could have had him at a court-martial trial, because I think that it would have went great. But unfortunately, you know, it got to the point where we had no more money and I couldn't afford to go to trial. And I was willing to accept guilt, you know, and that was a touchy subject for me, because I didn't want to go to trial and argue that I didn't do it. I didn't think that I should have been charged with what I got charged with, you know. I mean, other people at the same time, for instance, Brian Nishimura mishandled top secret information, and General Petraeus mishandled top secret information. My information that I I had on my phone was confidential, which is the lowest tier of classification. You know, those other gentlemen, they mishandled far higher security material, and they were able to be charged with misdemeanors, and neither one of them did any prison time.
Well,
so,
Christian,
yeah,
it, doesn't the fact that Hillary Clinton now had no criminal intent, doesn't that
oh, yeah.
help her case?
No, no, because no, there was never an argument. So that was one of the most, I'll tell you, one of the most aggravating things, because I was sitting at home waiting to go to prison. I'd already been sentenced. And I watched Comey say on television, you know, exonerating Hillary Clinton, saying, well, she didn't have intent. So even though she mishandled classified information, she had no intent. Well, I didn't have intent to cause national harm. I simply was taking pictures. You know, I mean, I mishandled it just like, I mean, I wouldn't say just like, because she had 30,000 emails that she clearly had intent to bleach bit and to move over to a private server, but I had no malintent. You know, that was never a requirement for them charging me. And when he said no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case against her, I said, well, I know one, you know?
Well, look, at the end of the day, Christian, you made a mistake. And you've manned up at 30 years old now, new father. Recently reunited with your family, a good-looking family, by the way.
Thank you,
folks. We received some pictures from Bill McIntosh from Ocaso Media, and by the way, Bill, just personally from me to you, brother, thank you so much for what you do for the Hagmann Report, folks. Bill McIntosh, Ocaso Media, brings great guests to the program, like Christian Saucier. So I just want to give a little shout out to Bill, but Christian. Let's talk about how this got mucked up politically, because what I'm hearing, if I'm hearing you correctly, and I always tend to err a little bit on the side of the dramatic, okay? But it sounds like all you wanted to do was have a fair day in court where you could admit guilt, essentially throw yourself on the mercy of the court, hope that based on your age, your service record, and the relatively minor nature of the infraction, that you could, it could maybe even be reprimanded, maybe be knocked down a rank or two, maybe even retain your naval career, something that you had 11 years invested in. Folks, remember, the man you're listening to went to war, okay? He was deployed under CENTCOM twice to hot spots in the Middle East in a fast attack sub. That's serious business. That's putting your very life on the line for this country. And if I'm hearing you correctly, Christian, basically you were kept from your day in court by an overzealous prosecutor, military bungling, bureaucratic bungling, and the part that really chaps my hide, you ran out of money. You simply couldn't get, you literally didn't have the funds to get yourself into court, and so the whole thing just sort of unraveled from there, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah, I mean, that's correct. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to come off like I'm not accepting responsibility. I made a stupid mistake, and I accepted responsibility for that, and I was always willing to accept responsibility for that. But, you know, how can my issue with it is how can the Justice Department go after me with so much fervor and then completely avoid people like Huma Abedin or John Podesta or Hillary Clinton for what they did, you know? The only explanation I can have, and I watched the news in prison, and I watched her complain about how it was unfair and say, well, you know, I'm sorry for it, isn't that okay, or, you know, just get over it, and it just really upset me. You know, how can Hillary Clinton say all these things? How can Bill Clinton meet with the then acting attorney general on an airplane tarmac and everybody just accept that as, well, that's just the way it is? You know, how is that the head prosecutor in the country meeting with the target of an investigation spouse not an issue? And it was just aggravating for me, you know, because here
it's
I am somebody
everyone.
Who's, yeah, I mean, here I am a patriot. My whole family's patriots. We're all proud to be American. And we were put through the ringer in this situation. You know, money is what it is. Well, you know, you can always make money back, but our family was put through the ringer. And here, And we've all been patriots, and we've all given. My wife and I both were volunteer firefighters. We give back to the community. And here is this person, Hillary Clinton, who her and her husband have done nothing but rob the American public, you know, blind. And, you know, they said at one point that the streets were paved in gold in Washington, D.C. And that's what they're all about. And she let people die in Benghazi, those innocent people that she could have prevented died because of her inaction. And a person like that, in the eyes of the Justice Department of this country, is allowed to walk, whereas patriots like me are prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And I think people should really, I hope if nothing else people see from my case is that they see that, that there's really an issue in this country with, you know, the way the Justice Department does business. If they're allowed to do that and just go after people and then let wealthy people that have done nothing for this country, as far as I'm concerned, but, you know, hurt it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's, if you're in that 0.01%, then you just slide right through. But
yep.
the current powers that be, the federal government, what I like to sometimes call the central government, seems to have no qualms whatsoever with watching a good man. Okay, this gentleman you've been listening to for the last 45 minutes, Christian Saucier, is a good man. Okay, I would buy him a steak any night of the week. He served his country with distinction. He's decorated. He went in submarines into a scary and potentially deadly environments. This guy's. I know the word is often overused, but he's a hero, not a criminal. He's admitted his mistake. You haven't, and I appreciate this, Christian, you haven't tried to obfuscate or in any way diminish what you did. You were, what, 20-something, 5-6 years old? You made a stupid mistake. And, again, the part that I want to reemphasize, and I'll make this my final comment, Joe will have something to say, and then we'll give you the last few minutes. Folks, I would really appreciate it if you would go to HagmanReport.com. Simply go to the title of tonight's show, Snapshots or Espionage, Christian Saucier, Peter Barry Chaka, and Charles Van Wyk. Click on Christian's name. The first time he's listed, there is a link. Click on that link. I just did it myself during break. Christian, I dropped you a few bucks. I hope it helps. Really, help this family out, folks. They served. They're having a tough time. Christian is a proud man, and he doesn't want to make a big issue out of this tonight, but I am willing to make an issue out of it, and I would personally appreciate it if the Hagman Report listeners and viewers would help this military family out. Joe?
Yeah, Christian, we only got about 3.5 minutes left. Why don't you tell people a little bit about, I know you got a long 7-month house arrest. What are you looking forward to doing now that you're home and when you get off house arrest? Do you have any plans yet?
Well, no. And honestly, I've been putting out job applications everywhere because, you know, it's difficult now that I'm a felon and I got a bad discharge from the military. You know, kind of taints the individual. You know, people see me as this criminal and it's difficult. I think I'll be able to get over it eventually and hopefully be able to find myself a job. You know, I have my commercial driver's license, so maybe I'll be able to find a job doing something in that department. Pretty much everything that I did in the Navy, all those skill sets kind of useless now based on the fact that I'm a felon. I can't really do that outside of the Navy, unfortunately. But I'll figure it out, you know. I'm a survivor, and, you know, I've been through tougher times than this, and my family will make it. As long as we have each other, that's all that really matters. And, you know, I really hope that, you know, people will reach out and ask President Trump to, you know, he talked about me a lot. I know we haven't really talked much about it on the show yet.
Yeah,
but
let's
about
jump into
the
that.
Campaign trail.
The last 2 minutes we have, the emotional roller coaster that you mentioned that you were on when the issue was brought up during the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I watched candidate Trump bring up my case, and my lawyer actually met with a representative of the Trump team before the election at Trump Tower, and they said, you know, if we get into office, we're going to make right the wrong that happened to your son. And you know, and basically, so, you know, we had a lot of hope, and while in prison I saw him commenting on my case and saying, you know, this is wrong on Hannity, and Sean Hannity really took the ball and pushed my case real hard about the injustice that happened, and I'm really appreciative to him for that. You know, and I just hope that President Trump is listening and that he'll help my family out. I think the most important thing to me, it's not money, it's not anything, you know, they can't change the fact that I'm proud of my service to my country, and whatever's on paper won't change that. But if I could get a pardon, you know, I served my year, you know, I took my punishment. If I could get a pardon and be able to restore my good name and be able to go on with life, that would definitely be a step in the right direction. So,
I'm sorry, finish your thought.
Oh, I know, that's fine. I just, I hope that, you know, President Trump I know he's capable of doing it, and, you know, I'm so ecstatic that he got elected and not Hillary Clinton. I mean, honestly, I mean, honestly, you know, I know it's kind of messed up to say because, you know, what my family went through and stuff, but if what the misfortune that happened to my family somehow affected some people seeing the double standard in this country and helped people make the right choice at the election booth, then I'm grateful for that. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, and I'm grateful for that. Thank you for the part, for the role that you played in that. Christian, we're running out of time here, sir. I want to thank you for your gift of time this evening, number one. Number two, we're going to stay with this case, so to speak. We're going to follow up with you, with your permission. Would you like to come back and join us a little later down the road and give us an update on how things are going and how life is coming back together for you?
Sure, sure.
And folks, the site for the fundraising, it's www.youcaring.com/fundraiser-758096. Or you can get the link at Hagman Report on the show page for today and click Christian's name, and that will take you to the page also. Christian, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to having you back on in the future, and we hope everything goes well for you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Folks, we'll be right back after this network break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman Report.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's small, smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.